Hey everyone, this is Elijah Johnson with financeandliberty.com, and back with us today is James Corbett from the Corbett Report. James, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Elijah.
All right. Well, I'd first like to discuss about today's news that the Fed kept interest rates low. What is your perspective on this?
Well, it shouldn't be a surprising move. We'll put it that way, because there is no economic reality underlying the idea that the Fed should be hiking rates right now, not only because of the domestic situation in the United States and the fact that the U.S. is heading back into recession, but perhaps even more importantly, for the state of the global economy, which obviously we've seen in recent weeks is in a very precarious state. And that's not even taking into account the way the Fed itself has created that very precarious state that we're in by its ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, for the last few years. That has truly skewed global markets in ways that are profoundly affecting a lot of different countries. And we're in a situation where it's not only the Fed that can affect other countries by the rate hikes or rate cuts that it makes, but also then when those countries fail, because, for example, there's a Fed rate hike, that failure can then flood back into the American markets and affect what's happening in America. So I think we're in a very precarious situation. So it makes perfect economic sense that the Fed would not attempt to hike rates right now. Still, that's perhaps a surprising move for people who think that, well, maybe the Fed isn't that interested in keeping global stability at this moment. But regardless, I think probably the most interesting thing to emerge from this is, and you're catching me at a disadvantage, it's the morning time as we're recording here in Japan, so I've just woken up and I'm just taking in the details of the meeting and the press conference that emerged from this Federal Open Market Committee meeting. But one of the details that I'm looking at right now is a chart that was released by the FOMC, appropriate pace of policy firming, midpoint of target range or target level for the federal funds rate. So this is kind of a federal funds rate hike projection that they're doing, what they think might be coming in the future. And right now for 2015, this current year, most of the, I'm guessing that this represents the votes of the various board members, and most of those seem to be in exactly the 0.25, maybe 0.5 range that is around where rates are right now. But there is one dot on this graph that is actually in negative territory. There is someone who is arguing for a 0 to negative 0.25 interest rate range, and that dot also appears on the 2016 projections. That's extremely interesting because it indicates that the Federal Reserve is at least contemplating, although Janet Yellen said in response to a question, we were not seriously contemplating, but anyway, they were contemplating the idea of negative interest rates for the Federal Reserve, the Fed's main rate, which is, I mean, that's a huge, huge deal because, again, we've seen that starting in Europe, but one imagines that there really is nothing else left in the kitchen pantry, so to speak. In the event of a serious downturn in the American economy, rates are already at zero. You can't go below that unless you go negative. And so apparently, emerging from this meeting, at least the idea they've introduced the idea that they could go negative with rates if there is some sort of downturn.
And you were talking about how, you know, there was no reason for the Fed to raise rates. The economy really, truly is not in any situation that raising rates would be a good idea right now. And I know that the Dow went down not too much today, but it did go down, which is somewhat surprising because you think if, you know, the Fed is saying we're going to keep, you know, interest rates low, you'd think that the stock market would go up. But I'm thinking, on the other hand, do you think people are realizing, well, look, if the Fed is not ready to raise interest rates, that's actually a sign that the economy is not doing very good?
Well, yes. I think what we're getting into is not just second guessing, but third guessing and fourth guessing every single move that the Federal Reserve is making. And I think to some extent, the idea that they weren't going to raise rates had already been priced in. So that if they did raise rates, I think it would have been we would have seen a much steeper collapse on the Dow and on the S&P. So the fact that it is going down, despite the fact this is the news that the markets presumably want, that at least the liquidity, the tightening isn't going to start happening quite yet, the fact that it's going down in the event of that news must mean that the markets have already priced this in and are now starting to contemplate. Well, I mean, for one thing, this shows that the Fed is losing its credibility. It now has, I believe, one meeting left this year in order to potentially raise rates. So they've been saying for a while they were going to start raising rates this year. So if it doesn't happen in December, then the Fed is losing credibility, which is important only because we are, as I've said before, we are living now in a time in which the economic reality that we're living in is being created by the dictates of central banks. And of course, in the United States situation, that's the Federal Reserve. If the Federal Reserve hikes rates or lowers rates or announces new quantitative easing or starts some of this quantitative tightening that we're now talking about these days, and if in any of those events, it's the central bank, it's the Federal Reserve that is driving the economy and what's happening in the markets. So we've reached that point where now every single announcement that the Fed makes is being scrutinized 17 different ways and is being priced in beforehand, and there's people hedging on what Yellen is going to announce next. So we've really entered, I think, a very Twilight Zone type phase of this manipulated market reality that since demonstrably, I think, since 2008, it has been the Federal Reserve that has been driving the American economy, and unfortunately not driving it in a way that I think is sustainable or shows any sign of long-term healthy economic growth. It's largely been an asset bubble that's been blown in response to the popping of the housing bubble, and we're even seeing signs of that starting again in the housing market in the United States, amazingly enough. So it's definitely a situation where the Federal Reserve is now losing credibility, and the markets are already starting to react in the opposite direction of what the Fed is wanting. And once that process starts to exacerbate, then, and the Fed completely loses control of the situation, that's when I think we are really in, we're going to see the effects of the last few years coming home to roost.
Right. I mean, you've talked about recently that you think the bubble is popping right now and we're just seeing a dead cat bounce in the stock market. Is that right?
Yes, I think what we're seeing right now, especially what we saw right after the Black Monday of a few weeks ago, back in late August, when we saw that, I mean, just incredible day of $5 trillion wipeout of on the markets in the week preceding that. There was an all-time record spike in the volatility index. We saw a 1,000-point Dow plunge right off the opening bell. We saw 4,500 mini crash events on various indices worldwide, halting trading and restarting it over and over in seconds time frame. We saw all of those crazy things happening, and then immediately after that, we saw the markets recover completely. And I think we have to look at that as a type of dead cat bounce. I don't think we can say that all of the underlying problems that the markets were screaming out about on that particular day were somehow suddenly resolved. I mean, there was nothing fundamentally underlying the markets that changed. It's just that investor confidence, for whatever reason, restored enough that the people started riding on the rally of that. And I think ultimately what that was signaling was not, as it has been blamed in the popular media, it was all China and the Chinese stock market and what was happening in China. I think, again, we have to look at this incredible asset bubble that's been blown in the last few years by the intervention of the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan and all of the other central banks that have participated in this quantitative easing, this expanding of liquidity, which has really driven the markets in the last few years, especially equities, where there is estimated to be something in the order of $27 trillion, I believe it was, dollars worth of assets that have been purchased by global central bank institutions and their fellow public institutions over the last few years. That was from a recent report by a bank-run think tank. And also in, of course, the bond bubble, which even the Bank of England has admitted is the largest bond bubble in in history, and they don't know how that's going to end, was, I think, the exact quote. So I think we are in an extremely precarious state, and nothing has fundamentally changed in the last few weeks to change that. So the rally that we've seen since that Black Monday, I really do think is a dead cat bounce. And I think if you look at the stock charts on the long, long, longer term, you can see a double top developing, quite an amazing double top, one that peaked in 2000-2001 with the dot-com bubble and then was burst. And then we saw a little rally and recovery with the inflation of the housing bubble. And then that burst. And then we've seen this incredible bull run in the last 7 years that has brought us back up to where we were around the time of the dot-com bubble. And I think that's, if you look at the chart that way, I think what we're seeing is a double top. And it's just a question of when I think that that top breaks and we start to see the downslide. I don't think it's really a question of if at this point.
And you were talking about how a lot of people are saying that the Chinese stock market was kind of, you know, caused the United States stock market to collapse. And you're saying that's probably not actually the cause. It's more that we've been seeing this, you know, this unsustainable bubble that's been created. Would you agree, though, that the Chinese stock market crash may have been the trigger and that we're living in this environment right now when, you know, where it's not so much that the Chinese stock market was the cause of the bubble, but it was the cause of the trigger, and that, you know, there's this huge bubble and basically anything can set it off?
Well, that's a fair way to look at it, because it really is at this point about the interconnectedness of all of these different parts that are moving and in play. So it's really difficult to separate them out. I mean, clearly what's happening in China right now, although the stock market bubble is due to the action of and the statements of the People's Bank of China over the last year or two, where they've deliberately pumped up the stock market bubble in China, basically guaranteeing that they would underlie and backstop whatever was happening there, which they've proven in spades with all of the money they've been pumping in to try to backstop those markets. That was a PBOC-created bubble. But I think it's also reflective of the overall global economic situation. So what we have to understand that the Chinese economic dragon, the engine that was driving the global economy for the first part of the preceding decade, back in the early 2000s, that was genuine economic activity that was happening because of growing global trade. But since the popping of the Lehman bubble, the Chinese economy has continued to expand, but mostly that has been a credit boom, an incredible credit boom that dwarfs anything that the Federal Reserve has been doing in the same time frame. If you look at the way not only the banking sector in China, but also the shadow banking sector has expanded credit to very large degree over the past 7 years. And I think that's related to what's happening elsewhere in the world. It's just that that's the way the PBOC has dealt with the slowdown in economic activity globally. But what I think all of these central banks are addressing is the same underlying problem, a slowdown in general economic activity. But what the Fed is doing in particular is essentially guaranteeing the markets. Essentially, we've entered a range where the markets now think that it is strange if they actually, if there isn't any type of correction. This shouldn't be happening. The hedge funds aren't, the very institutions that are supposed to be hedging against that type of event actually seem to be betting on the fact that the markets are going to continue going up and up. And that's why we saw so many of them in severe trouble with that Black Monday event and a lot of people losing some money because the markets actually dipped. So we've reached a stage where it certainly does flow both ways. What the Fed does influences the rest of the world. What the rest of the world is doing influences what the Fed can do. And you're right. I mean, I think the trigger could literally come from any part of the globe, and it could filter back to the source of it. And one thing that I think not a lot of people are talking about right now in relation to this is a dollar carry trade that's developed as the dollar has surged over the last few years relative to other currencies. We've seen emerging market economies, the governments of those economies, using dollars, borrowing in dollars, and then investing in their own currency as a type of dollar carry trade that's developed. We've also seen the emergence of reverse Yankee bonds in the first half of this year, where U.S. corporations are now issuing bonds in foreign denominated currencies, which again is the reverse of what usually happens. And this is only developing because of the growing disparity between the strength of the dollar and other currencies. People around the world are betting on the growing strength of the dollar and the falling strength of other currencies. If that were to reverse for any reasons, if the dollar started falling relative to other currencies, a lot of people would be caught on the short end of that deal, and you'd see a lot of those dollars flowing back into the American economy. You'd see emerging markets plummeting, and that would be really catastrophic. And I think that's one of the reasons why, if the Fed had hiked rates, I think there would have been some very serious consequences, and those consequences would have started outside the United States, but they definitely would have come back to affect what's happening in the U.S. domestically. So you're right, the trigger can come anywhere in the world right now, but I think the situation is so interconnected that no matter where that trigger event takes place, it's going to start to affect the rest of the economy.
You recently wrote an article about how, as you've been talking about, that the central banks have really created this mess, and that they've had, just to quote from the article, you said that it is the central banks that have created this mess. And what's more, they have created this mess in full knowledge that their actions would lead to disaster. And now one can be sure the same central bankers and their political puppet mouthpieces will use this crisis to continue the construction of the quote-unquote New World Order that they called for in the wake of the 2008 collapse, end quote. So did you want to discuss a little bit about how you think that the powers that be will use this collapse in order to bring about a New World Order, as you call it?
Well, not as I call it, as some of the participants in this call it. And let's just cast our mind back to 2008. In the wake of the Lehman collapse, we saw the London G20 take place in April of 2009, I believe. And at that time, we saw Gordon Brown, for example, the Prime Minister of the UK at that time, calling for a new world order to save the earth, was the phrase. And if you actually use that, type that phrase in quotation marks into Google or whatever search engine of choice, New World Order G20 2009, you'll find plenty of articles at the time that were noting that this is about the creation of a new world economic order that was taking place at that time in the event of that collapse. And what ultimately came of that? Well, there was a number of things that came from that, including the creation of the G20 as a body rather than the G7, G8, which had been the primary institution up until that time. So we saw the expanding of that global pie. But also, what we saw in that was the creation by the G20 of something called the Financial Stability Board, which is a subsidiary of the Bank for International Settlements, which is the central bank of central banks. All of the major central banks of almost every country in the world, including the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Canada, the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, People's Bank of China, the Russian Central Bank, all of these banks are involved in the Bank for International Settlements. They send their representatives there for, I think, biannual meetings, and they discuss central bank policies. A subsidiary of the BIS now is the Financial Stability Board, and it's chaired actually by Mark Carney, who was formerly the Bank of Canada governor and moved over to the Bank of England in a highly unusual move. And the FSB is the global institution that no one has ever heard of, basically, and they're writing white papers that are suggestions, I guess you could put it that way, for how various central banks should be regulating their economies. And then the member banks basically take them back to their own country and figure out how to implement them. One of the white papers that the FSB was working on was talking about how to recover large-scale financial institutions in the wake of, you know, some sort of collapse, i.e. a bank run. And that paper talked specifically about the bail-in mechanism and how they can take a cut of depositors' deposits over a certain amount, over the guaranteed amount, and bail them into the banking institution that is failing. Exactly what happened in Cyprus and what we've seen floated around talking about the very close collapse of the Greek banking sector earlier this year. So the FSB is one of these shadowy boards that no one's heard about but is working behind the scenes to bring things about things like that about, and that was created on the back of and as the result of the 2008 collapse. So The way I see it, every time there is a major destabilizing event, there is the creation of new international bodies and regulatory features to try to save the Earth once again, and it ultimately results in greater and greater control for the very few, usually the politically connected few, and usually the people who are running the banks themselves. And we see that going back, from World War II and the creation of the IMF, World Bank, Bretton Woods system, and all of those institutions that came about from that, to 2008 and the creation of the Financial Stability Board and things of that nature. So in the event of the next collapse, I don't think it's much of a bold prediction. I think it's just a pretty sober analysis of the way this tends to operate. In the wake of whatever collapse comes next, whatever major destabilizing event comes next, there will be things that will be proposed in order to once again centralize more power in the hands of the banks. And as an example of this, I offered in a recent article the example of the Bank for International Settlements, as I talked about the central bank of central banks, which, as Ambrose Evans Pritchard, writing for The Telegraph, noted in a recent article, is the only global body that was writing about the basically ringing the alarm bell on the 2007-2008 collapse. And beforehand. And now they are ringing the alarm bell on the exact thing that we're talking about today. There was they just released their annual report, and in a press conference on that report, their head economist, Claudio Barrio, made some pretty amazing statements that sound quite in line with what we're talking about today. He said, quote, "A world in which we are living in a world in which debt levels are too high, productivity growth too weak, and financial risks too threatening." He talked about some of the incredible things that were happening in the markets right now, the remarkable gyrations of oil price, sharp price moves over little trading in the FX markets, the dislocation of equities markets. And he said these things were not isolated tremors, but the release of pressure that has gradually accumulated over the years along major fault lines. And ultimately, he said, financial markets have become worryingly dependent on central banks' every word and deed. I.e. exactly what we're saying here. It's the central banks that are now dictating economic reality. So it sounds like the Bank for International Settlements, wow, they know what's going on. They're really smart. I see this more as an indication that the central bankers themselves know fully well the implications of what they're doing here. I mean, let's keep in mind, once again, the Bank for International Settlements is comprised of all of these various central banks, including the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve can't plead ignorance as to the effects of what they're doing, because the BIS itself is sitting there talking about these effects and how it's dislocating equities markets and creating these gyrations in commodities, including oil, and we're seeing all of this craziness in the FX markets. Those are the exact effects that the BIS is documenting. So the Federal Reserve knows fully well what is happening as a result of QE. But through the BIS mouthpiece, they get to warn about that so that after whatever crash, collapse, calamity may be about to occur, the BIS will be able to be paraded out on the stage. Look, these are the wise sages of the global economy who they were ringing the alarm bell before 2007. They were ringing alarm bell before 2015. These guys knew what was coming before it happened. So we should listen to them. And of course, that will be used as a ploy to once again centralize more power in the hands of global economic institutions like the BIS and like the IMF, which again, I think is being positioned to take a greater role in the event of the next collapse, if for no other reason than it is one of the very few global bodies that is actually solvent. The central banks, now have trillions of dollars on their ledgers in the credits, but the IMF is actually solvent at this point because of large inflows of money from members like China. And they are being positioned to take over the role of the steward of the global reserve system as the dollar starts to wane in strength and importance through the special drawing rights, which the IMF administers. So I really think that the coming action is going to be in that arena. We're going to see, in the event of whatever destabilization occurs, especially destabilization of the dollar, we're going to see a push towards the special drawing rights system as the new standard for the global economy. And once again, it's going to be centralization of more and more and more power in the hands of a completely unaccountable, largely unknown to the general public, ruling clique at the very top.
So how will this centralization of power affect the average person?
I think it will probably be most easily accomplished through a sort of stealth process, whereby people, of course, will still continue to use whatever their local currency is, the American dollar, the Canadian dollar, the Japanese yen, the Mexican peso, whatever it is. I think things will continue to be denominated in that. But the global reserve currency will switch at some point. I'm not saying this will happen this year or next year, but some point in the preceding years, all things trending as they are, the dollar will be eclipsed as the world reserve currency by the special drawing rights, SDRs, which are a type of reserve currency that are only used and only tradable by central banks. It's only the central banks that handle them to settle their current account deficits or trade surpluses, to settle with each other. And special drawing rights are not a currency in and of and themselves per se. They're a type of claim on other reserve currencies. So they're a claim on either dollars or euros or yen or pounds. And presumably in the near future, although the IMF has yet to make its decision on this year, but in some time in the near future, the yuan will be added to that basket so that any central bank holding these SDRs will be able to claim in those currencies. So that the international system, which right now is based primarily on the dollar, the petrodollar, really, since the 1970s and Nixon and Kissinger's wranglings with the Middle East and Saudi Arabia, that will be eclipsed by a system where the central banks are trading with each other in special drawing rights administered by the IMF. In a system that, again, it will not affect you when you go to the store. You will still use your dollars or whatever you are currently using to purchase your goods. But behind the scenes, those currencies themselves will be administered and looked over and stewarded over by these central banks with each other through an internationally administered special drawing rights basket, which will, once again, I think, further centralize control in the hands of unaccountable bodies like the International Monetary Fund that, again, most people don't even know what these bodies do, let alone that they are actually have such kind of control over the global economy and where things are heading, and can decide, for example, that the yuan should be one of those currencies or should not be one of those currencies. And they can make those types of manipulations behind the scenes without most people even knowing about it. So how will it affect people's everyday life? It will still look very much similar. You will still go to the store and you'll still buy goods with whatever currency you're used to buying them in, but it's behind the scenes. Those currencies will be even further manipulated and even further out of the hands of the public. For example, for Americans listening to this podcast who are concerned about the way the Federal Reserve manipulates the value of the dollar, well, that power will be displaced even further when it's in the hands of something like the International Monetary Fund, to a body that isn't even nominally, even in a token sense, American. It will be, that power will be further displaced, and again, further up the ladder towards a smaller and smaller clique of international and unaccountable bodies.
Well, James Corbett, once again, thank you so much for joining us today. I guess, are there any last thoughts you'd like to share with our viewers, and where can they find you on the internet?
Well, once again, as always, I just like to say to people, well, don't take my word for anything that I'm saying. Please do check my sources and check my work for yourself. I always do include sources to what I'm talking about. For example, in that article on the BIS that I was referring to, How the Banksters Play Good Cop, Bad Cop. Again, all of these articles and videos and interviews and podcasts that I do are available on my website, CorbettReport.com. I hope people will check it out and use it as the resource that it is.
All right. Once again, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.